Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Immediately, the rumors started.
The mysterious death of a legendary sports star.
There's this massive landslide of myth.
Legend of Tahti.
And somewhere in there is the truth.
Part of Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service. Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, how Haiti's business community is struggling to keep going, with gang violence preventing most forms of commerce. The boss of the social media network Blue Sky tells us about picking up millions of new users in Brazil thanks to the ban there on Elon Musk's site X.
Elon has really turned Twitter into something that is really controlled by one person, and our goal is to do the opposite of that.
And sitting comfortably, we look at the tech behind top flight airline seats.
You've got entertainment systems. In some of these seats, they come with a 32-inch TV screen. They even have cooling systems to keep all of the electronics from overheating.
That's all coming up on World Business Report. But first, let's go to Haiti, where the Caribbean nation has been in chaos for decades, though the situation has worsened since the assassination of the president in 2021. It's now riven by gang violence and poverty. It's got the lowest Human Development Index rating in the Americas. The Haitian authorities have expanded a state of emergency to the whole country as the government battles violent gangs that have taken control of large parts of the capital and are attempting to move into other regions too. The latest attempt to bring back some order also involves an international police mission staffed by Kenyans and heavily funded by the US. Well, the US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has just arrived in Haiti to push for new elections there. And on arrival, he spoke about his hopes for Haiti.
We've seen the presidential council be stood up, the government, the prime minister stood up, the arrival of Kenyan colleagues to support the police in this critical security mission. We're starting to see results from that, all with the objective of putting Haiti on a path to elections next year, but also to creating a secure environment not only for the elections, but to making sure that services can be delivered to the Haitian people who so desperately need it, development can move forward, and life can return to greater wholeness.
Antony Blinken there. He's about, in fact, to stage a news conference there in Port-au-Prince. And one of the journalists there is Widlaw Merencourt, editor-in-chief of Aibo Post, an online media company. Widlaw joins us now. Widlaw, I'm sorry we're interrupting you just before the press conference, but just if you would give us a sense of kind of what the hope might be that what America can do there in Haiti to try and improve matters.
Well, we are facing a very, you know, difficult situation here in Haiti. Politically, the presidential council that is leading the country has some of its members implicated in a corruption scandal. The fourth, that is supposed to bring some peace and some sense of normalcy to the country, is not showing, you know, an overwhelming force against the gangs. Today, you know, the gangs are all powerful. They control 80% of Haiti capital. So many people here, including the journalists, actually are expecting that Mr. Blinken is going to announce, for instance, you know, a renewed commitment for this force. There is, you know, discussions to transition from a Kenyan force to a UN peacekeeping mission. There are many questions about that, including, you know, the fact that last time the UN came to Haiti, it brings cholera and you know, was implicated in so many horrific cases of human rights violations.
Indeed. I mean, yes. Many people recall, of course, the awful nature of that and what happened and how bad the cholera was, of course. But Widlaw, tell me about the kind of thing that Haiti needs at the moment. I mean, I guess it needs investment of various kinds, but that's not very likely to happen.
Well, you cannot have investment, quite frankly, if you don't fight effectively the gangs that controls, you know, most of the capital. But increasingly, they are also extending the grip on other places in the country, including in Artibonite and, you know, the south of the country, etc. You know, you cannot come inside of Port-au-Prince or leaving the capital without encountering, you know, gang activities. They controlled most of the main roads, and it's still a big problem here. So I think the main issue today is to stabilize the political situation and also make sure that the force that we have can effectively fight the gangs.
And you say political stabilization, that's going to involve elections, I suppose.
Absolutely. There are discussions from the Presidential Council to bring the country to elections, but we are running, you know, behind schedule for, you know, for instance, the Electoral Council. Many things are still yet to be determined, and many people and analysts you speak to are telling you the time that they set up to have elections, they are going to miss that schedule.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to organise, I'm sure. Wiedlaw, thank you so much for being with us. So we'll let you get back to that press conference, which I know is about to start. That's Wiedlaw Merincourt, who's editor-in-chief of the Yaibo Post, there speaking to me live from Haiti. But let's look at how bad things actually are in the country right now. Mr. Blinken's visit comes as more than a million people remain without electricity in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Protesters had earlier stormed and vandalised a power plant there. Earlier, I got through to a Belgian businessman, Martin Boot, who's in Port-au-Prince, and he advises a number of companies trying to operate there in Haiti. He told me about the situation for those trying to do business.
We were all very excited to see the Kenyans arrive in June and July. And then, to be honest, I think we all, almost everybody's somewhat disappointed with the overall progress. Now, it isn't in any way the Kenyans or the Haitian police's fault. I believe that everything is, you know, is delayed. The equipment came in late. There's some struggles with the coordination of the overall force. There's some of the other countries that had committed troops haven't come through yet. So unfortunately, not a lot has changed on the ground. Actually, to the contrary, some of the gangs have actually taken more terrain. And it's just as difficult to do business as it was, you know, months ago. The difference is the airport is open. The port is functioning somewhat, so that is an improvement. But all for the rest, in terms of circulating in the country, the threats around the capital, not much has changed.
So, I mean, in detail, what's going on, Martin, is that you can't really move, I guess, between areas. You can't transport things because of the gangs.
That's right. So about 80% of the capital in surface is controlled by gangs, which means that a lot of the areas are completely inaccessible. There's literally trees growing through roads in some areas because they've been locked down for that long. Other areas have tolls. So they put, you know, soldiers to man and toll certain roads. And then the only way to get through, if you want to take the risk, is to pay a toll and then, you know, basically move through there. And in the case of larger companies such as Digicel, for example, what happens is we have to rent barges to go to the extremes of the country, the southern part of the country, because, again, the northern and southern exits to the capital are completely blocked out because they're controlled by gangs. Yeah.
But ordinary business people trying, I suppose, to drive taxis or supply food, groceries, that kind of thing, can that function at all?
Barely. To be honest, barely. A lot of the informal businessmen and business people can function. A lot of medium and larger businesses have left the country, have simply shut down because their factories are in gang-controlled areas. They couldn't deal with the extortion anymore. Their family members were kidnapped. So the ones that could afford it moved to the U.S. and some to Europe, some to other Caribbean islands. So there's definitely much less, or some to the other parts of the country. Cap Haitien has had a bit of a boom because there aren't many gangs yet, even though they are getting closer. So yeah, it's really, the entire country is running at a very, very slow speed. So it's great that Secretary of State Blinken is there, and I do hope that he can encourage the other partners to come through with their promises that they can expand the base where the Kenyans are based right now. There's about 450 of them there. The base can house 450. So whatever happens, they need to build more military base to house any other troops that would arrive. There's also talks of the mission being now transferred to the UN. That would require a resolution by the Security Council. But what's happened in the past is that China and Russia have, who are members of the Security Council, have oppose that, because I'm assuming that they want to leverage other issues they have with some of the other members, and Haiti's kind of found itself in the middle there.
If the mission succeeds, is that of itself going to sort Haiti out? Are you then going to move towards a better order, the ability of people to do normal things, sell things, buy things, and presumably move towards elections?
It will help with the free movement of goods and people for sure. It would only help very temporarily, Roger, because the reason those youth and all those youngsters are with those gangs is because there's no alternatives. So if unless someone, you know, we all the countries, everybody moves in again and creates jobs, creates investment, unfortunately, this phenomena will just come back in 4, 5, 6 years from now, even if we have elections.
Martin Boot there speaking to me from Haiti.
He's celebrated for things so much beyond his wrestling. The idea of being kind, compassionate, and helping others.
Mystery surrounds the death of a legendary Iranian sports star.
The state was taken aback by the breadth of segments of society that believed he had been killed by the state.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents Legend of Tahti.
He was not a political figure. He just wanted to help his people.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now, it's just a week since the social media platform X was banned in Brazil after a legal row with a Supreme Court judge there. The website, formerly known as Twitter, refused to ban specific accounts accused of spreading disinformation, and Brazil's internet providers were then told to block it. But there's an upside for a rival, Blue Sky. It's added 2.6 million users over the past few days, and over 85% of the new users are Brazilian. Well, I spoke to Jay Graber, Blue Sky's CEO, and first, can she confirm how many new users there are?
Yeah, we've had about 2 million Brazilians join Blue Sky in the past week. We've had multiple waves of Brazilian users join. One of the very first groups of communities that joined was a group of Brazilian users back when we first opened up Blue Sky in an invite-only version last year. And so this is the third, and it's the biggest one, but we love Brazilians. They bring a lot of energy to posting, and it's been very exciting to be providing a foundation for people to connect and talk to their friends.
Do you see it as a direct result, then, the latest of X being banned?
Very likely. But in the past, we've also had Brazilians come on because they're very excited about social. It's just a market where social networks are very well received. Brazilians kept this social network, Orkut, alive for years after Google was no longer really supporting it. So it's one of those things where I think Brazilians are among one of the most social countries in the world.
Now, just walk us through how it works, because obviously X makes its money to a large extent through either advertising, which we know has dropped, but also a subscription model. How does Blue Sky work? Do you make more money with more subscribers?
Well, we haven't monetized yet. We're fairly young. We just opened up to the public in February of this year. And so we're a fairly new platform. But the thing that we're doing is building a social network that's fully open source and puts users in control. So developers can just come in and build on it. There's more ways to access the Blue Sky network than just the Blue Sky app. People have built other clients like Deck Blue and other apps to access it. And users can customize their feeds. And so it's something where we're building a network where users have a lot of customization options.
I suppose the potential risks, though, are the same that have occurred with X, which is that you have people expressing views that are pretty out there, perhaps even exchanging misinformation, all sorts of things that have been accused of X. Do you have any controls on that?
We do. Yeah, we have a foundation for moderation built into the app. And on top of that, users can stack in other layers of moderation built by the community. There's a lot of demand for a place to connect with friends that doesn't have harassment, hate speech, like lots of misinformation. And there's always a balance where, governments have a responsibility to protect their citizens, and freedom of speech is important to a free society. So at Blue Sky, we're building a space for healthy discussion and self-expression, and we try to find the right balance between protecting free speech and addressing real harms. So,
but that's really difficult to do, isn't it? Because, what one person might consider a fair expression of opinion, another might consider to be an incitement to racial hatred.
Yeah, it's a really complex issue. A lot of governments and societies are grappling with it right now. And we work alongside trust and safety practitioners, policymakers, and our user and developer community as we navigate this, because users and developers in the Blue Sky ecosystem are also able to build solutions. And so if there's things that people feel like are not being adequately addressed by the moderation team that we run with 24-hour coverage, they can hop in and start building a version that of moderation that stacks on top of what we've built.
Okay, that's sort of internal moderation and regulation. But what about external? I mean, we know in Brazil it's to do with a legal action, in fact, against X at the moment and the way it operates. But there have also been pressures, as I'm sure you know, within the EU to regulate social media as well. Can Blue Sky work with that?
Yeah, we are working to be in full legal compliance because, you know, we're offering a service in various countries. And it's, you know, our job to be the best providers as we can of those services.
And would you welcome regulation? I mean, you say you're legally compliant, but there seems to be more regulation coming in. You will welcome that, would you?
There's all sorts of regulations around social media right now. I think we've reached a place where the tensions of the social media model, where one company controls the speech of billions of people, is becoming an escalating risk. And so I think lots of governments around the world are taking their own approaches to it, including here in the U.S., state governments. And in the middle of this, our approach is to build an ecosystem where developers and broader society can all contribute to a solution. So trust and safety experts, community experts, local experts can get involved in this network and start contributing their solutions.
What do you think of the way that Elon Musk and X operates then?
Blue Sky is really different. We're built from the bottom up to give users more control. And so instead of one algorithm deciding what you see, we let you subscribe to many different feeds that the community has built. Instead of one app deciding what you see, you can access the network through different apps. And as a developer, you can just jump in and start building. Elon has really turned Twitter into something that is really controlled by one person. And our goal is to do the opposite of that, to make sure that there's a balance between, you know, the sort of safe platform that we provide and the freedom for developers to get in and build and create the experiences that users want to have.
And Blue Sky won't be a vehicle for Jay Graber, for example, to put her views out there.
Exactly. It is not a vehicle for me. It is a public good that we're trying to build out to give people the ability to really control their own social infrastructure, because social media is increasingly important to society. That's why there's so much regulation increasingly around it. And people need a foundation to communicate and connect on that is a public good and not something owned by one private person.
Now, you said at the moment you're not monetized. Do you know when you might get to the point of being monetized and making money out of this?
We're working towards it.
No timescale.
Well, it's hard to give timescales, particularly with stuff changes as, you know, past week has brought very different things, but it's definitely on our immediate horizon.
Jay Graber there of Blue Sky. Listening to that, Lily Jamali, our U.S. technology correspondent based in San Francisco. Lily, what struck you about what you heard there?
Hey, Roger. Well, I mean, we can start with that 2 million figure. She told you that's how many Brazilians have signed up to use Blue Sky in recent days. That's a big number. And emerging platforms like Blue Sky, you know, they really depend on events like this one, this dust up between Elon Musk and the Brazilian courts to drive growth. Blue Sky has had a very deliberative rollout. They started with that invite only model, which she mentioned. It's been a bit of a double-edged sword. You can keep closer tabs on potential problems, but it does limit growth. And now that they're open to anyone, you know, it's moments like this that can really help a platform like it gain traction. But they need people to sign up. They also need them to engage. And so what we're seeing in Brazil, it's one of those events that at least gives Blue Sky a chance to, you know, to compete in what is a pretty crowded space.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, do they stay there? Because when Blue Sky was launched, I think a lot of people joined in, but then maybe not so keen after a while.
Yeah, well, guilty as charged. That's me right there. And I think your point is a good one. This is such an important question to be asking right now. Having reported from Brazil myself, I've seen firsthand how engaged people there are, especially young people with social media. I was reporting there just as Instagram was starting to take off. This was years ago now. And I was so struck at the time by how immersed they were on that platform back when, you know, we were still in the heyday of Facebook here in the U.S. So, you know, with that said, if you're a new platform, you really need people to stay. You need that network effect to survive. And, you know, one quick anecdote I can share here. My colleague, BBC producer Ben DiRico, was just in touch with a self-described Twitter power user in Brazil today. This user is on Blue Sky now, but his complaint is that there's just not a lot of other people there actively using it, at least not yet. I mean, that could change. I will say, you know, old habits die hard. And once you've committed to a platform, you're invested, you've built your following, decided who to follow, it can be hard to leave. I think that's the situation this particular user finds himself in.
And Lily, briefly, interesting hearing Jay Graber there virtually say that she didn't agree with what Elon Musk is doing. I mean, defining the company that way. A good strategy?
I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the most resonant arguments to get people to switch to Blue Sky right now. We heard Jay Graber tell you there Elon has really turned Twitter or X into something controlled by one person. And she said quite explicitly their goal is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? Jilly, Lily, thank you very much for being with us. Lily Jamali there talking to me from San Francisco. Well, we were talking there, of course, about Blue Sky and X. Joining me now, Kerry Leahy, economist at Columbia University. Kerry, thanks for being with us here on World Business Report. There's another a social media site, very interesting at the moment, Donald Trump's Truth Social, not doing so well, at least on Wall Street.
No, it's getting crushed. As some of our listeners may know, its stock is not necessarily owned by professional investors, and it's owned for personal reasons and tends to move a bit with the presidential prospects of said Donald J. Trump. Now, right now, it's getting hurt in addition because Trump is going to be able to sell a considerable amount of stock, still worth billions, even though the stock has been losing value as for months now. But they're waiting for a turnover date, which I believe is sometime next week. So that's particularly hurting the stock. But this is a company that has no profits, and its revenues is giving you a price to earnings ratio that's in the thousands. So it's a highly speculative, very expensive stock.
Interesting, isn't it? Well, while we're talking about Donald Trump, he's been making a few remarks, actually, at the Economic Club of New York, talking about what he might do if he becomes president again, including endorsing a government spending commission that could give Elon Musk broad responsibilities for auditing federal spending and regulations.
I will create a government efficiency commission tasked with conducting a complete financial and performance audit of the entire federal government and making recommendations for drastic reforms. We need to do it. Can't go on the way we are now. And Elon, because he's not very busy, has agreed to head that task force. Be interesting if he has the time.
Well, Kerry, is that going to please the markets, the thought of Elon Musk having that kind of influence?
Probably not, given that he's not proven to be particularly successful as a public figure. I mean, he's been very good with companies like Tesla and very bad with companies like X. But what he might do that's positive out of all this is that if he says two things, one, we can't keep doing what we're doing and we need to deal with retirement and healthcare spending, which is out of control. And maybe we need to increase taxes because we got to pay for what society, the basic things society wants. That'll say a lot if someone like Musk says it, because he's very good if he has an idea. He's great at making sure everybody knows about it.
True, true. And finally, and briefly, Kerry, U.S. jobs numbers. We've got the non-farm payrolls coming out tomorrow. A few jobs around details today suggesting, well, I mean, it's hard to say what it's suggesting.
Well, the claim figures only give you half the story. They're telling you about who's being laid off. And those numbers after trending up, meaning more people applying for unemployment insurance, has been disturbing. But the numbers in the last month have been okay. They're higher than they've been, but they are leveling off. And so the market is prepared for, I wouldn't say the worst, but they're prepared for a quite small positive figure. So any negative number would just be a wild and crazy day in the marketplace tomorrow.
And we'll be reporting on that. Thanks so much for being with us, Kerry. Kerry Leahy, economist at Columbia University there. Now, are you sitting comfortably? If you are, the chances are you're not listening to us while on an aeroplane. Not that plain seats are always a pain in the backside. In fact, some of them are made with great care and ingenuity. Some can cost tens of thousands of dollars each, especially if you're lucky enough to be in first class, where they come fitted with the very latest entertainment systems, luxury upholstery, and, of course, loads of legroom. Well, the BBC's Chris Baraniuk's been visiting factories in Northern Ireland, where nearly a third of the world's aircraft seats are made. He told me about the process.
These seats are designed to go into a pretty compact space, but still offer a huge range of functionality. You think of it like a big bit of technology packed with different capabilities. I mean, you've got the reclining seat itself that can recline fully into a 2 meter flat bed. You've got storage and stowage for anything you might bring on the plane right there in your seat. You've got entertainment systems. In some of these seats, they come with a 32-inch TV screen. They even have cooling systems to keep all of the electronics from overheating. So it's packing all of that into a repeatable compact space that makes them so precise and difficult to do.
Yeah, and I guess you sit on them, bounce up and down on them? I don't know. Are they comfortable?
I didn't get the chance to bounce up and down in them. I think they may have taken umbrage at that. But I did get the chance to lie down in one briefly, and very comfortable, I have to say. I think really you'd have to lie there for about 7 hours to really test them. But they do have robots at this production line where the robots are interacting with the seats. They're moving tray tables in and out thousands and thousands of times to see if they'll hold up to constant use or repeated use over their lifetimes.
And I guess, I mean, you're touch testing the luxury end of the market there, I guess, but they're also economy seats. Do the companies make those? I guess they're different.
These companies in Northern Ireland, I mean, there's three that tend to get mentioned. In particular, there's Thomson Aero, Collins Aerospace, and there's also Alice Blue Aero. And these companies tend to specialise in business class and first class seats. That's what they really want to do, is specialise in that high-end part of the market. There are other companies around the world who make a lot of economy seats. Safran is a good example there in France. But the precision engineering is very highly desired by airlines, by aircraft manufacturers for this premium part of the aircraft. They want to be able to choose from a big range of seats that come with the latest technology. Fine leather, fine fabrics. They want to set themselves apart. This is what Thomson Aero told me they'd like to appeal to. And that's what they really specialise in.
And that was Chris Baraniuk, who's been visiting the factories in Northern Ireland to look and see how these things are made. In fact, I spoke rather longer to Chris Baraniuk. And if you want to hear a lot more about the kind of seats you might be sitting in, you'd have to pay premium prices. You can join us again in the fully premium class Business Matters, that's at midnight GMT here on the BBC World Service, when we'll be talking about it. My problem with those sort of seats, though, is not the quality of what you're sitting on. It's kind of, well, how can I put it, the people you're sitting next to. You can't do an awful lot about that. But maybe there'll be World Service listeners as well. Maybe, in fact, they could be people who listen to World Business Report. Share your enthusiasm for the kind of insights and in-depth analysis that you get here with us. Let's hope so, because then you can have a nice conversation in a nice, comfortable chair. But that's it from World Business Report. For me and the rest of the team, thanks for being here. Bye-bye.
He's celebrated for things so much beyond his wrestling. The idea of being kind, compassionate, and helping others.
Mystery surrounds the death of a legendary Iranian sports star.
The state was taken aback by the breadth of segments of society that believed he had been killed by the state.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents Legend of Takhti.
He was not a political figure. He just wanted to help his people.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.